facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
A marvelous Monday to you. So good to be with you this Thanksgiving week on the Cale Clark Show. Maybe you're already on the road back home to see family and friends. Maybe you're listening in the car. Maybe you're on your device. Wherever you may be, you can call in to talk to me for free. 1-888-914-9149. You can also get me on Twitter. You can follow me there at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. The show account is at Cale Clark Show. And the show account is a little quiet today because producer Lucas, he says he's left Twitter, but he's really still on Twitter. He's running the show account. It's kind of his shadow account. So anything that's kind of weird that's posted there, I just kind of blame it on him. But producer Lucas is under the weather today. So Lucas, you're probably listening right now. We're praying for you. Everybody's praying for you. Hope you're feeling better by tomorrow. And anyway, so the show's in good hands. Patrick Alog will be around in just a few minutes. And Maggie Greschel, who's very special. He's kind of guest producing today. So we're kind of having fun. Are you on the air, Maggie? Can you get on air with me?
I sure am.
Okay, there she is. So the very talented Maggie Greschel will be here with me. And you can call in 1-888-914-9149. The email is Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. Well, I tweeted this out earlier. I do have some thoughts on Adele. I finally got a chance to watch the Adele One Night Only special. And man, this is one confused lady when it comes to love. I have some definite thoughts on that. Going to get to that in just a couple minutes. But yeah, what do you think, Maggie? Did you watch that?
I did watch it with my my parents and my boyfriend. And we loved the music. We loved, yeah. loved the music. But there were a couple of times my dad and I kind of shared glances and we were like, oh boy.
The interview? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I have some definite thoughts on this. This is, wow. And I'm sure you guys will too as you listen. But anyways, that's all coming up in just a little bit. But first of all, I want to tell you guys about something that happened to me this weekend. On Saturday morning, I went to Saturday morning mass, daily mass, at my local parish. And maybe this has happened to you. I want to hear what you guys would have done in this situation. Okay, so I'm just going to lay this out for you. And then I'm going to ask, what would you have done? You can call in 888-914-9149. And then later on, I'll tell you what I actually did. But I want to hear what you would do first because you guys are generally a lot smarter than I am. So anyways, showed up for mass. And because of the pandemic, a lot of people, a lot of kids are not getting their sacraments. They didn't get them on schedule. So the parish is kind of trying to fill the gaps a little bit. And there were two kids that were there to receive the sacrament of confirmation, which they kind of did during the context of the mass. And that was really cool. And there were a lot of family and friends of these kids who were on hand. And whenever something kind of out of the ordinary happens, I'm super happy that all these folks are there. But sometimes I get a little nervous around communion time because there are invariably people who come to, let's say it's a memorial mass. This often happens on a Saturday morning. It'll be like a memorial mass. And so a lot of family and friends, the deceased person, maybe it's a death anniversary or something, they'll come out. If it's a first communion, a lot of family and friends come out. Confirmation, that's what we had in this case. And there's a lot of sort of extra people there. And I always kind of get nervous around communion time because invariably there are a lot of non-Catholics there, a lot of non-practicing Catholics. And you just kind of worry about, sometimes the priest will make an announcement at some parishes and they'll sort of lay it out. Hey, if you're in a state of grace, blah, 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 you're welcome to come up. If not, you can come up maybe with your arms folded across your chest and you can just receive a blessing instead. But sometimes they don't explain things. Anyways, so I noticed during communion time, so I went up, received our Lord, and as I'm walking back to my pew, I look down and I see a host on the floor. And I'm like, what do I do? What do I do? And I'm like, should I just pick up the host and consume the host? And then there's this guy waving at me from the back pew, and he's like frantically trying to get my attention. He's waving at me. And this is a regular mass attender. He's there every day. And he kind of like motions to me saying, the dad dropped the host. So the dad of one of the kids who got confirmed apparently dropped this host on the way back into the pew. And there it was still in the aisle. So I'm going to leave that there And I want to know what you would have done in that situation. 888-914-9149. I'll tell you what I did do, whether it was a good call or not. I will let you know. So I want you guys to weigh in, and I want to get the collective wisdom of the crowd here. So anyways, it was kind of an unexpected situation. But these things, sometimes we run into these things when we go to Mass, and maybe you have too. So anyways, you can call in. Once again, 888-914-9149. But first, I do have some thoughts about Adele, One Night Only. People are still talking about this. This aired last Sunday night, November the 14th. And Adele put on this One Night Only special concert, which was recorded at the Griffith Observatory in Los Angeles. And that's a very famous landmark, and it's quite gorgeous. And actually, they did it at sunset. They had lots of cool drone shots. It was very, very picturesque. I believe, if memory serves me correctly, the James Dean movie Rebel Without a Cause was filmed there. And I don't know why I'm remembering this, but apparently one of Paula Abdul's video. Remember the song Rush, Rush? Anyway, so I think she filmed that also at the Griffith Observatory. And I think it was kind of a takeoff, a send-off, or some sort of a copy of that movie with James Dean, and Keanu Reeves was the leading man, and whatever. Why am I remembering these random video moments from a bygone age? Anyways, but that was the setting, and it was quite nice. And obviously they did this to kind of coincide with the release of Adele's latest studio album, which is called 30. And you might have heard, of course, if you've been living anywhere on planet Earth, you've probably heard, well, I've played clips from it. I'm going to play it again right now. Her chart-topping smash, Easy on Me. You got that clip, Maggie? Okay, all right, Patrick's got it. Okay, Patrick has it. When he gets here, he'll have it. So it's always good to listen to Adele for, you know, hey, she's one of the greatest singers of our... Okay, all right, it's okay. But we'll keep going for now. And so this latest studio album from Adele is called 30. And she has this habit of releasing albums that coincide with her age. So I think it was her first album that was called 19. So that kind of reflected that period in her life. And then a few years ago, she came out with an album called 25. And this one is called 30. So I'm looking forward to her 14th studio album that'll be coming up eventually, called 65. And I'm sure the songs will be about other stuff. But no, that's not a joke. That's original to me. And I would credit the source, but I can't remember who said that. I did read that somewhere, and I thought that was pretty funny. But, oh, okay, right, well, let's play it. Here's Adele. Go I'd love to just let that play, because Adele is just awesome singer. But I'm not going to go easy on you, Adele, because I don't agree with some of the stuff that you were saying and doing, okay? So my friend Deacon Doug McManaman, he wrote an article about this. He watched the show as well, and it's going to be published, I think, in December at lifeissues.net, but it's already on his website, which is dmcmanaman, MCMANAMAN. If you got that, don't worry. If you didn't, we'll put it in the show notes. So my friend Deacon Doug McManaman, he's a prolific writer, and he wrote about this too. And he noted that there are a lot of ironies in this whole Adele One Night Only thing, because, okay, so it was a concert interspersed with an interview that she gave with Oprah. It was very similar. If you saw the Meghan and Harry interview at Oprah's place, it kind of looked like it was in the same place, in Oprah's backyard garden, which is probably bigger than most small towns. But anyways, lots of irony in this. Hollywood likes to talk of inclusivity, is against exclusivity. But hey, I kind of noticed, and my friend Deacon Doug did too, that if you look at the crowd, there's a pretty exclusive guest list. You know, Leonardo DiCaprio, Selena Gomez, Drake. Hey, Drake. I'm not sad that Drake's there. He's from Toronto. I love that guy. So Drake was there. Gordon Ramsay, the famous chef. Seth Rogen, Tyler Perry, Lizzo, Nicole Richie, you name it. There, all these Hollywood celebs were there. There were no members of the hoi polloi there that I could see. And even as they saw these drone shots kind of give the sweep of the whole scene, it didn't look like anybody was on the trails around the observatory that you can see in the mountains. Nobody was kind of allowed within 1,000 yards of this place. But anyway, so Adele gave a concert. The singing was great. She's a real one. She doesn't use auto-tune. It's all natural. She sounds just as incredible singing live as she does on the albums. It's really, really, she's great. She's great. And one of the actual kind of nice things that happened during the interview was that this guy proposed to, this is all a setup, this guy proposed to his girlfriend, who had been, apparently he's been dating her for 7 years, in the show. So he kind of, they were doing a picnic at the bottom of the mountain, and they kind of blindfolded her, he brought her up by the hand and led her right in front of the stage, and everybody was super quiet. And then he takes off the blindfold. Adele is there. All these celebrities are there. And the guy proposes to her in front of everybody. And thank goodness she said yes, or else that would have been pretty embarrassing. And then they got front row seats for the rest of the show. And what was kind of ironic about it was, as the comedian Colin Jost noted on Saturday Night Live this past weekend, he said, well, yes, this guy proposes to his girlfriend, and then, yes, I'll marry you. And then for the next hour, they have to listen to Adele sing about divorce. And not that divorce is a laughing matter, far from it. But this was the subject of her interview with Oprah. And this is what I really had an issue with. And some of you might as well. You can call in if you did. 1-888-914-9149 is a toll-free line to call. And she starts talking to Oprah, and they kind of intersperse the interview questions with Oprah with her concert footage. And she talked about how unhappy she was. She talked about how unhappy she was before she got divorced. And her husband's name is Simon Konecki. And this is leading up to that interview. She said this a lot that night too with Oprah. She said that neither one of them did anything wrong. Neither one of them did anything to hurt one another, you know, other than the divorce, I guess. She says, I still love my husband very much. In fact, they live across the street from each other still. Obviously, they're very involved in caring for their son, Angelo. But one of the things she told Oprah is that she is no longer, quote, in love. I love him, but I'm not in love with him. That's one of the things that she said over and over and over again. And so this is super concerning for a lot of different reasons. And this is part of the reason why I think marriage is falling apart by and large in our society, marriage and the family. And people are just really hung up on this idea that love is a feeling. And so Adele, when she was no longer in love, quote unquote, she was unhappy. But what she doesn't understand is that love is not a feeling. Love is an act of the will. It's an act of the will. He said, well, that doesn't sound like fun. You know, do I have to will myself to love? Sort of like, you know, by sheer dint of my will, love this person? Well, we'll get into all that, but there's basically two kinds of love in the human person that has to do with marriage, okay? And my friend Doug McBannerman laid this out pretty well in his article. So there's what the Greeks called eros, from which we get, you know, the term erotic. That has to do with romantic love, okay? So this is the idea of being, quote-unquote, in love. It's love on the level of emotions, but there's another kind of love. And this was called by the Greeks agape. And that is sort of this love that's based on the will. I choose to love the other person by my will. I'm going to do it for the good of the other person, no matter what it feels like for me. And the best example of this is Jesus Christ crucified. Did the cross feel good? Absolutely not. I gave my life for my bride, the church. That's what Jesus says on the cross. So this is part of the package, okay? And when it comes to marriage, both of those things are present, but not always at the same time. Certainly this feeling of being in love is not always around. And this is what happened when Adele kind of lost that. then she thought, well, that's the end of this relationship. But she didn't get to the next level. She didn't get to the next level. So if you're only loving somebody on the basis of your emotions, then you can fall in the trap of just loving somebody primarily for what the other person does for you. It makes me feel good, blah, 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 blah. But this other kind of love, which is known as agape, again, it's willing the good of the other, not for what it does for you, but for the other person's sake. And so this is what establishes a marriage. This is what it's all about. And for a marriage, like, for example, a church marriage, for a marriage in the Catholic Church to be valid, you've got to have four things. Love has to be free, total, faithful, and fruitful. That's the theology of the body right there, right? Four parts of the marriage vow. Have you come here freely? You know, is your mother-in-law making you do this? It's not a good answer. Have you come here freely in order to give yourself without reserve to one another? That's the call to love totally. Do you promise to be faithful unto death? And the last one is, the last F is fruitful. Will you accept children as a gift from God, and will you raise them according to the laws of Christ and his church? So this is exactly how Jesus loved his bride, the church. And that's what the vows, the marriage vows and the sacrament of marriage are based on. Because Jesus said, I give up my life freely for you, for my bride, for the church. No one takes my life from me, Jesus said in the gospel, but I lay it down of my own free will. So his love for us is free. Is his love total? Yeah, look at the crucifix. This is my body, which is given for you. Is he faithful? Will he ever leave his spouse, the church? I will be with you always to the very end of the age. That's what he says at the end of the Gospel of Matthew before he ascends into heaven. And he is with us, especially through the Eucharist. And then the last thing, is his love for the church, his bride, fruitful? Well, how many of us have been baptized into the church? How many of us have been born again by water of the Spirit into the church? Billions of us throughout time, throughout the 20 plus centuries of the church. And so we were born once naturally of our human parents, born supernaturally by baptism into the family of God. So that's what the marriage vows are based on. They're not based on feelings, how you are feeling, but a freely given consent, an act of the will to give yourself exclusively and entirely to your spouse in sickness and in health, good times and bad, until death do you part. So there are a lot of times in marriage when you don't feel like, when people might not feel like continuing on. If they're basing it completely on their feelings, they might not do it. So, for example, as we get on in age, we might not be as attractive as we once were. Heaven forbid. We might put on a couple pounds here and there, and might lose the hairline might recede ever so slightly, or maybe a lot. But you can always, you know, get a toupee. But at any rate, that's yeah. Patrick Alog just whispered in my ear, Rogaine. I guess that's what he uses. But at any rate, there are a lot of reasons why you might not feel like continuing. You might be fighting. You might have some serious disagreements. There might be a trying illness. All kinds of different situations can put a tremendous strain on your marriage. So this romantic love, this feeling of being in love, which is very common at the start of a relationship, that's not strong enough to maintain the relationship until death, because that's like the engine that gets it going. And I'm not saying that a lifelong marriage can't have that romantic love still, and plenty of marriages out there do, of course, but it's not the thing that keeps it going. And so my friend Deacon Doug, he quoted the psychologist M. Scott Peck. Do you remember that guy? He wrote a book years and years ago called The Road Less Traveled. You might have heard of it. Here's what he writes about, and this is from a psychologist's perspective. He writes this, quote, "Of all the misconceptions about love, the most powerful and pervasive is the belief that falling in love, quote unquote, is love, or at least is one of the manifestations of love. And this is a very potent misconception, because falling in love is subjectively experienced in a very, very powerful fashion. When a person falls in love, what he or she certainly feels is, you know, I love this other person. But there are two problems that are immediately apparent. The first problem is that this experience of falling in love is specifically a sex-linked erotic experience. And by that he means, of course, the chemistry, the attraction, the physical attraction between you. That's what he's talking about. He goes on to say, we fall in love, we quote-unquote fall in love, only when we are consciously or unconsciously sexually motivated. The second problem here with this is that the experience of falling in love is invariably temporary. No matter whom we fall in love with, we sooner or later fall out of love if the relationship continues long enough. This is not to say that we stop loving the person with whom we fell in love, but it is to say that the feeling of ecstatic lovingness that characterizes the experience of falling in love always passes. The honeymoon always ends. The bloom of romance always fades. End of quote. So that was a quote from M. Scott Peck, The Road Less Traveled. So this is, and I think he does a good job of laying out the difference there and what this sort of feeling of falling in love is really all about. And so the problem is it gets old. It the honeymoon does wear off, as Scott Peck says. So only this love that's concerned for the other person, this self-gift for the other person, this act of the will, that's the only thing that's going to carry us through, because that is the part of love, that's the part of marriage that's freely chosen. You have control over this. You have control over this, because when you quote-unquote fall in love, you don't always have control over that. What I mean by that is you can't always control who you are attracted to initially. And one of the things that Scott Peck says in his book, too, is that, and this is not necessarily a good thing, but he says psychiatrists sometimes fall in love with their patients and their patients fall in love with them. And at some level, that's kind of makes sense because they're sharing all this intimate stuff about their life. But they're not supposed to act on that. Obviously, they have professional obligations and blah, 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 blah. And people become attracted to or can be attracted to almost anybody. And you could even know this person is actually not somebody who I would even really, under normal circumstances, want to be friends with, or someone that might not even have good character traits, but I'm attracted to them. This sometimes happens, right? Someone that in your right mind you wouldn't even choose to be friends with, you feel attracted to. And so that's the thing. So you can't always control this feeling of attraction, but you can control, when you're married, this act of the will, this act of self that is freely chosen. So, and this is part of the problem in society today. I kind of sound like, I don't know, an old fuddy-duddy here, I guess you could say, you know, kids today. No, but honestly, every message that's out there in the media is teaching people, and this is kind of what Adele fell prey to, that if I don't have this feeling of being in love, then I must leave the relationship. And that's exactly what she did with her husband. So we're going to have lots more to say about this when we come back. Plus, what should I have done about this host on the floor? I told you about that. 888-914-9149. Be right back. Gale Clark Show, Relevant Radio.
You can live it and share it too. It's the Cale Clark Show. Have a question? Give Cale a call at 888-914-9149.
Hey, just heard that number. Interesting rejoin song, because it's about being happy. Gonna make you happy. Well, Adele was searching for happiness. And she's not a very happy person, despite her worldly success. And I'm going to get into that again in just a second. But first of all, our thoughts, our prayers are with everybody in Waukesha, Wisconsin. That horrific tragedy that happened at the Santa Claus parade yesterday with a driver careening into the crowd, and five people are killed, and dozens of others are severely injured. And we're not, as far as I know, we're not 100% clear on the motive of this individual, what he was thinking, but we do know he has a history of violence, including using automobiles as a weapon. And it's just a horrific tragedy. So we're praying for everybody in Wisconsin. And of course, a lot of our listeners are located there. And so we're keeping you in mind, keeping you in our prayer. And certainly in the Family Rosary Across America tonight, Father Rocky will be having this at the top of his mind as well as he leads you in that wonderful prayer. So please, at 7 Central, join us for the Family Rosary across America. So just before the break, we were talking about the Adele special, One Night Only, her interview with Oprah. This whole album that she's got out now called 30 is about her divorce. And she, one of the things that she kept on talking about with Oprah is how unhappy she was. Now, again, like, she's kind of on top of the world from a human point of view, from a worldly point of view. She's got more cash than than a person could probably ever spend in one lifetime. But she's not happy. And as if we needed another example from Hollywood about how, I mean, these celebrities that seem to have it all, honors, comforts, pleasures, rewards, financial security, they don't have happiness. And Adele does kind of understand that happiness has something to do with love. But again, she's so fixated on this experience of falling in love, this romantic love, being in love, quote unquote. And when that did not endure with her husband, she felt like she needed to get out of the relationship. And I was sitting there watching this show with my wife, Trish. One of the things that Trish said was that, you know, that old line from the Usual Suspects movie, the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world that he doesn't exist. Well, that's his greatest trick. But his second greatest trick, according to my wife, is this lie that I deserve to be happy. I deserve to be happy. Now, certainly God wants us to be happy. He wants us to be blessed. If we read the Beatitudes in the Sermon on the Mount, you know, blessed are the peacemakers, blessed are these guys, blessed are... And it comes from this Greek word makarios, which means happy or blessed. So sometimes it's... there's a really corny book on the Beatitudes called The Be Happy Attitudes, all right? So, but this eternal blessedness, that's a lot different from the happiness that most people are trying to chase. And I think the lie that Adele fell into is this concept that's so prevalent in society that if you put yourself first, then you must put yourself first in order to be happy and to be of any use to anybody around you. And so what she kept saying in the interview, and this is, I think, a line from a song on a previous album, I didn't want to just survive, she said to Oprah, I wanted to live. And she felt like she was merely surviving in her relationship with her husband. And she said, you know, I didn't want to do this to my husband, to my son. So I deserve to be happy, so I'm going to leave this relationship. But I think she feels really, really guilty about this. Deep down, she knows that there's something off about this, but I don't think it's registered with her conscious mind, because she kept saying stuff like, how do I explain to my child that I tore apart his world for his, you know, for my own happiness? I tore apart his world. Wow. Like that doesn't sound like somebody who's completely convinced that she did the right thing. So my friend Deacon Doug McManaman, when he wrote this article about Adele's interview, he said that a very basic principle of the moral life is that happiness is virtue. You can't be happy. You can't live this blessed life, if you will, without virtue. And so virtue is what's necessary for happiness, not pleasure, not honors, not fame, not power. And you can only get genuine love. Adele is looking for love, maybe in all the wrong places, to quote an old country music song. But genuine love, which she's really looking for, which all of us are looking for, is channeled through virtue, because that's how we get our emotions to follow reason. And that's how we get our emotions to fall in line with the truth of God. So when we're able to do that, then we can actually be even more passionate than we otherwise would be. Doug McManaman says, it's for this reason that happiness is so difficult to achieve. That's why it is pretty rare to find happiness, because it's difficult to achieve virtue. If it was that easy, if it was easy to achieve happiness simply by falling in love, quote unquote, by getting this romantic love, and if romantic love was as permanent as young people tend to think it is, we would be living in heaven on earth. But that's not the case, though. That's clearly not the case. Happiness requires work. It requires achievement. It requires a moral achievement that's rooted ultimately in the will, not in the emotions. When a married person is not in love anymore, that's when the difficult work of genuine love begins, unless you turn your back on your spouse in the pursuit of adolescent excitement. And that's kind of what Adele seems to have done in her life. And now she's got a new boyfriend now. She's dating Rich Paul, LeBron James's agent. Anyways, I don't think she's going to find what she's looking for until she gets all this sort of straightened out. So Deacon Doug says that the genuine love that we're looking for really demands, again, this exit from yourself, this willing the good of the other for the other's sake. And even this word, everyone's looking for ecstasy, right? The word ecstasy comes from the Greek word ecstasis, which means literally to stand outside of oneself. It's kind of like an out-of-body experience, I guess you could say. And he says that that's why people who are really preoccupied with themselves, who are focused a lot on their body image, how they're feeling at every moment of every day, what's my own personal state of happiness, they're actually always unhappy because they're completely and constantly focused on themselves. But the more that you sort of exit yourself, you forget yourself in this genuine, this agape love, this being concerned about the others, that's when you actually find yourself. That's the paradox. To live, you have to give your life. You have to pick up your cross. You have to give up your life for Christ to find true life. That's the paradox. And so marriage creates precisely the environment, the context for those who are called to it, in which you can always have these conditions. There's innumerable opportunities for self-sacrifice for the good of the other every single day. And so that's what it's all about. When during the period, you know, a few decades ago in the 60s and 70s, when love was purely identified with this romantic side of love, this eros side of love, that's when marriage started to go on the decline in society. And the fact of the matter is, Adele is not going to find the happiness she's looking for until she actually kind of forgets herself and her own need to, quote unquote, be happy and focus on the good of others. First and foremost, her own family, her husband. And she may have thought, I'm doing the right thing for them by getting out of this relationship. But I don't think so. I don't think so. Just a little postscript to this, too, before we move on to the next thing. And if you want to comment on this, 888-914-9149. I want to go back to this quote from M. Scott Peck, the psychologist. He wrote a long time ago, The Road Less Traveled. And he says, falling in love is not an act of the will. It's not a conscious choice. Remember, we talked about that before. We are just as likely to fall in love with someone whom we are obviously ill-matched with as with someone more suitable. So it's not about this feeling. That's the engine that kind of gets the relationship going, but you've got to have more than that. You've got to have this self-giving love. He says falling in love is not an extension of your boundaries. It's a collapse of them. To extend your limits requires effort. Falling in love is effortless. So yeah, anybody can fall in love. Anybody can have those feelings, can kind of just go with the flow in that sense. That's effortless, but extending your limits, actually conquering yourself, looking for the good of the other is really, really tough, is really tough. So he kind of speculates in his book that this idea of falling in love is part of how God, you know, infuses our nature so that, hey, we do get together, we do pair off, we do propagate the species, we do survive as a species. He puts it this way. He says, quote, to put it in another rather crass way, falling in love is a trick that our genes pull on our otherwise perceptive mind to hoodwink or trap us into marriage. Okay, so that's a pretty negative view of marriage there. But he goes on to say, many of us who are happily or unhappily married today would have retreated in wholehearted terror from the realism of the marriage vows, end of quote. And so I think the basic point he's making there is, again, this falling in love, the chemistry, the attraction, that is necessary to get the whole thing going, to get that train moving. That'll get the train to leave the station, the train of marriage. But once you are married, it changes. And yeah, hopefully that romantic stuff is still there and you got to feed it, you got to nurture it, you got to work on that too. But that's not what it's about. That's not how you're going to progress in love. I don't know. So that those are my thoughts on the Adele event. I told you I'd have some more thoughts on that, and I did. So there you go. So if you want to comment on that, I also want to get back to the story of the dropped host. I'm going to tell you what I did do in that situation on Saturday morning at the parish, but I wanted to hear your take on this. Once again, if you're just tuning in now, off the top, I mentioned what happened on Saturday morning. I went to a mass. I was a confirmation mass. Some kids were getting confirmed. The dad of one of the kids dropped a host on the ground at communion time and just kind of left it there. And I saw it and I'm like, what do I do? So what would you do? 888-914-9149. We're going to go to the phones right now. We're going to go to Mike in New Jersey. Hey, Mike. Oh. Mike, are you there? Are you still there?
I am here, yes.
Okay, good stuff. So what's your take on this, Mike? What would you do in that situation?
I had a similar experience just a couple of weeks ago. I was a lector, and the choir was behind me. And they get their Eucharistic station is right in front of me. Mm-hmm. So as I'm there, a host fell. One of the choir members dropped the host, and then I told my wife about it afterwards. She said, "Well, what happened with it?" And I said, he put it in his pocket. And she said, well, did he consume it? I said, well, I'm not really sure. I'm assuming he knows what to do with it. Well, that wasn't good enough for my wife because she's got a real devotion to the Eucharist, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So after Mass, she went up to the choir loft, dug through all the choir robes, and pulled that Eucharist out, and then took it over to the rectory where our priest consumed it right then and there.
Okay.
Huh. So I thought the choir person would know what to do, but she didn't, you know, she wanted to make sure the Lord was where he was supposed to be.
Oh, well, okay. Well,
so
hey,
that's
awesome that your wife, you know, just would not be, you know, we're going to find this host. We're going to find our Eucharistic Lord here. And we cannot have a host sitting in a robe somewhere in the sacristy. So Mike, thanks for sharing that. I appreciate that. That's a great story. Yeah, that was Mike in New Jersey. We're going to go now to Daniel in Sacramento. Hi, Daniel.
Oh, God bless you. Yeah, thank you for
thank
your
you.
Time.
God bless
that,
you.
That was really great, what that story there, that the lady there, persistent to find out. My gosh, could you imagine if you were a choir and you put your hand in there and there was a host and our Lord was there and you had no idea?
Oh, my goodness.
That's clearly there's a lack of belief, because if you believe that that is God, you wouldn't. Anyways, mm-hmm. I'll go to my what I think we need to see when Pope Emeritus Benedict, mm-hmm. when he was Pope, to answer this question, he worked to end to expose the errors of communion in the hand when he was Pope. He would not give communion in hand, either with St. John Paul II. And he knew that's an error that he was trying to stop. So that right there needs to be, communion in the hand needs to be stopped. And St. John Paul II says it's a privilege of the ordained to touch the sacred species. But answering your question, immediately we have to go to the priest, because the priest is the one in authority to touch, distribute, or whatever. We have to directly go to the priest right then and there. Or if it's during Mass, of course, you know, when the priest traditionally, then the spot would be purified, because there could be particles or whatever, and our Lord is present in the smallest particles. So traditionally, the spot would have been purified, and then the priest would, consume it.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem here is lack of faith, which is communion in hand, which is an indulge.
Well,
and I don't know if people understand.
Yeah,
what an indulge is.
Let me jump in there, Daniel, just because we're just up against the clock here. We got to take a break in a second here, but I do appreciate the call. And obviously, communion on the tongue is the norm in the Universal Church, but obviously, it is at the discretion of local bishops to allow communion in the hand. So having said that, I'm going to get into this a little bit more after the break. So we're going to take a quick break right now on the Cale Clark Show. 888-914-9149. We'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the show. I got to tell you, Advent is just around the corner, and you can discover the beauty of Advent along with Charles Dickens's classic, A Christmas Carol. It's brought to you by the Merry Beggars at Relevant Radio. This is really cool. It's something that they've done with 25 professional actors, the first of its kind, an audio Advent calendar. This is really neat. New episodes of A Christmas Carol are going to drop daily from December the 1st all the way to Christmas on the 25th. So you can join your favorite characters from Scrooge to Tiny Tim in this timeless tale. And you can get more details about this at relevantradio.com or the Relevant Radio app on the Merry Beggars production of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. That's a really, really cool concept. And you'll have to check the website for this. It'll blow your mind. It's pretty cool. So go to relevantradio.com for more info on that. I got to tell you real quick, Patrick Alog, who's screening calls and producing for us today here on the show. He's a huge Jeopardy fan, as most of you know. He's just a diehard Jeopardy guy. And he told me about a seminarian from the Archdiocese of Portland that was on the show on Friday. It was really cool. And he actually got asked a religious question, and thank goodness he buzzed in and got this first, because it would have been totally embarrassing if he couldn't get this.
Jetstream 4.
A member of the Society of Jesus. Xinyan.
We're the Jesuits.
I'm glad you got that right. That's correct.
He got it right. So this is Mr. Xinyan Vo, who's from Christ the King Parish in Oregon. And he's a seminarian. He also got asked about something else. Check this out. This is by the great Ken Jennings, the goat of Jeopardy. Check it out.
You can't always guess the profession of a Jeopardy contestant just by looking at them. But in this case, you might have guessed that Xinyan Vo from Portland, Oregon, is a Catholic seminarian. Tell me a little bit about seminary life. I understand there's a talent show.
Well, there is a talent show. It happens yearly. And we've had a recurring act that I and some friends of mine have done, which is where, well, I can't freestyle rap. I'm terrible at freestyling. But we will pre-write battles and perform them where each of us is in character as a saint. So last year, I was St. John of the Cross and crossed lyrical swords with St. Ignatius of Loyola.
Do you wear any of the priestly outfit or the clerical getup?
Well, John of the Cross is a Carmelite, and Carmelites have this white covering over their habits. We didn't have any handy, so I tied a bathroom towel around myself.
MC towel, I love it.
All right, so the seminarian, unfortunately, he got into the negative territory dollar-wise on Jeopardy, and he didn't win, but hey, it was kind of cool to see a seminarian on the show, so Mr. Xinyan Vo, we are certainly praying for you during your formation process. All right, we're going to get back to the phones right now. What would you do if you found a Eucharistic host on the ground during Mass? Let's go to Molly in St. Louis.
Molly. I didn't find a host in Mass, but I'm a Eucharistic minister in a nursing home.
Okay.
And I was distributing the Blessed Sacrament, and many of my patients are quite ill, and this particular patient didn't quite grasp the host tight enough. And it fell on the floor, and I remember one of the ladies saying, put it in a little cup of water and let it dissolve. But I wasn't really near any water, so I just consumed it right away. I just picked it off the ground.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I hope I did the right thing.
Yeah, you know, Molly,
I hope I did the right thing.
Well, Molly, it's you know, I don't think it was a bad thing. And Molly, I'll tell you that one of my parish priests that I used to, I don't go to this parish anymore because I moved. But one of the things that he would do is very often he would find Eucharistic hosts after Mass. You kind of go through the church, go through the hymn racks and the pews, and he would find hosts in the pews. And you say, well, how in the world does this happen? Well, I think part of what happens, you told me you've seen this happen a lot, is that moms will, maybe not just moms, probably dads too, not to blame one parent, but very often what will happen is a kid will come up in the communion line who's not of the age to receive their first communion, and they'll kind of want to have some of the host. So what these moms will do sometimes, and these dads, is they'll take the host back to their pew. They won't consume it right away. There's supposed to be people watching this, right? Like, you know, ushers or whatever. But they will take the host with them back to the pew, and then they'll kind of break it in half or whatever and give half to the child. And then the child says, I don't like the taste. And then they spit it out and leave it in the pew, which is horrible. But this happens a lot. So that may be one reason. Anyway, so he would find all these hosts, and then he would do that. One of the things that you recommended, he would put the host in water and put it in his office and just kind of put it on the shelf. And over time, of course, the appearance changes. So the presence of our Lord is only there while the appearances of bread and wine remain. So eventually the host begins to decompose over time, breaks down, and then the presence of our Lord is no longer there. And then he would simply, you know, take the glass and dump it out into the garden or whatever the case may be. So that's one option. That's one option. I'll tell you what I actually did in that case, because I did promise you guys, I think I didn't do the right thing necessarily in this case. So like I said, confirmation mass, the dad of the kid who is being confirmed drops the host on the ground. I didn't realize that at the time. I just saw this host on the ground, and I picked up the host, and I was going to consume the host because I thought, I was worried that someone else was going to keep, you know, the communion line. I was worried that the host would be trampled upon by other people. So I was actually just going to consume the host. I figured it had to have been dropped like just now recently. And then this guy's waving at me from the back of the church saying, no, 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 the dad of the kid who's being confirmed dropped the host. So I probably shouldn't have done this, but I came up to him and I said, sir, did you just drop this host? And he said, yeah, I'm sorry, I dropped it. And then he takes the host from my hand, and then I see he kind of tucks it in his hand like he's just going to, like he wasn't going to consume it. And I'm like, hold on here. Like, what are you going to do with this? And I said, sir, are you going to consume that host? And he said, oh, okay, I'll consume it. I was like, you got to consume it. So he consumes it. But then I realized afterwards, I said, man, I probably shouldn't have done that because number one, I realized later that probably what happened was this guy's probably a non-practicing Catholic, probably. I'm making assumptions here, but because as a previous caller said, if this guy did believe in the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist, there's no way he would just leave our Lord on the floor like that. Number two, he might not have been in a state of grace, and maybe I shouldn't have been encouraging him to consume the host, but what I probably should have done is just consume it myself. But at any rate, in the moment, that's what I did. He consumed it. I hope he wasn't in a state of mortal sin. I hope he didn't realize that. Anyways, I probably, in retrospect, should have either got the priest or consumed the host myself. At any rate, that's what I did do. Probably wasn't the right move. And that's it. So, all right. Let's go to John in Rosemont, Minnesota. John, we got about 1 minute here. I want to squeeze you in. What's your story about this?
Okay, it was probably 5 years ago. It was Ash Wednesday, and I was in like the third pew from the front, and it was communion time, and a family was up, you know, going in front of me, or past the front pews, and it was a family I hadn't seen for a while, or I hadn't seen it ever before. And a young kid, probably six, 7 years.
Okay.
He's probably third grade. Anyway, he took the host from the Eucharistic minister, and then he put it in it, and he walked a little bit, and he put it in his pocket.
Uh-oh.
And all of a sudden, I just felt something pick me up and followed that kid to the back of a church.
Yeah.
And then I stood behind him, and he pulled it out of his pocket, and then I went up to him and I said, "Would you please consume that?" And his dad kind of looked at us, and the kid consumed it, and I just
good for you.
Yeah, something just moved me to go and do it.
Yeah, John, thanks for that. Thanks. I'm glad we were able to get that call in. Yeah, I think the Holy Spirit maybe had you jump out of your chair. Just, you know, obviously a passion for the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist, and that's what drove you. And yeah, in those situations, sometimes that happens. That's happened to me before as well. At any rate, that's the show for today. We're already out of time, but we will be back tomorrow. Maggie and Patrick teamed up on the show to produce. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.